Paul Gelber, Executive Director of the Canadian Mental Health Association, Cochrane-Témiscaming. You were at a pre-budget consultation yesterday, and I take it what you told the committee is that to solve all kinds of problems in both districts, we need help right at the very foundation of what you do.
Absolutely, absolutely. I don't think this is going to come as any surprise to anybody that, like, healthcare is facing tremendous challenges, particularly mental health and addiction services. Some of our services are really cracking from the pressure that it's under. And so when we were talking to the Legislative Assembly yesterday, you know, I really wanted to drive home the point that there's a few key things that we need to focus on. We need to focus on the investment required to stabilize the system. We need to focus on supportive housing, operational funds for supportive housing. So that's not just the bricks and mortar, which is really important. We need more housing stock and affordable housing stock for sure. But the actual supportive component of this, the people who help people with activities of daily living and maintaining residents. And finally, underscoring the need for funding for crisis hubs.
Yeah, because Timmins right now, and I know other communities in our region really are in a crisis.
Absolutely, we're particularly impacted in the north. Some of the things that that impact us, one is, for example, in addiction services, we have services that are well understood as being part of the continuum of care for addiction services that aren't available in our region. So it's not a question of do we have sufficient capacity, you know, to support individuals. There are some services that are simply unavailable.
Is that because of lack of staff, lack of available staff?
Well, there are a number of variables. One is simply the funding availability to provide the services. And then we do have a health human resource challenge. And again, if I was to put this in perspective around staffing and human resources for mental health and addiction services, typically our staff are paid 20 to 30% less than individuals than their peers in other healthcare services. I mean, that's a huge difference. And what it contributes to is a high turnover rate, longer vacancies. And when we are able to fill these vacancies, we support individuals, you know, in the on the job training and whatnot. But then oftentimes what happens is they move on to these other sectors in healthcare that can pay 20-30% better than what we can. And the work that we do is so built on the foundational relationships that we can create with our clients. Our ability to affect change in the clinical rapport that we develop with them is a function of that clinical rapport. So when you have somebody who develops that relationship, that clinical rapport, that trust between the person who's providing the service and the individual receiving the service, and then that individual leaves, that impacts that recovery.
You go back to square one or close to it.
Or close to it. And then you have to redevelop that clinical rapport. You have to redevelop that relationship and that trust. And it really is a challenge. Our clients are often coming to us in very difficult situations. They've often already had contacts with their friends. They've already had, you know, talked about what's going on with their family. They may have gone to their family doctors. They may even have went to the emergency department at one point. And all of these things, you know, may have helped very much in the moment, but it didn't sustain. And then they come to us. And think about it. They're walking through the door. They haven't met us, but they're trusting us to help them with this. That's a huge step. And my thoughts on this is we have to honor that by stabilizing our services so we can develop that relationship so we can help the individuals walking through our door.
Did you get any kind of feedback from the committee? Were they receptive to what you said? Did they promise anything?
No commitments were made during the consultation process, but I think that's also fairly typical of the process as well. I'm hopeful that they heard what I said, and I think particularly in healthcare in general, but in mental health and addiction services in particular, I mean, we're walking towards, you know, a necessary redevelopment of our services. The need for our services is growing exponentially, and realistically, for funding increases, that'll grow kind of more linearly. So there's a gap that's created between the needs that we see and the funding that we can get. So there is a component of this around policy, and we need to rethink how we do healthcare. But we need to stabilize the ship. So before we can turn this very large ship around, we need to make sure that we're not taking on water. And so I'm hopeful that they understood that the critical investments that are required are, one, beneficial to our communities. Two, can lead to cost savings. And I'll give you an example. If we can get to a place where we're really intervening at a point before people get ill or before their symptoms get worse, what we do is we change their location of care. They're no longer going into an emergency department where there's this cost or that we may be able to reduce by supporting them in community. So those are the types of things that I hope that they walked away with.